This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
This is the El Clasico Barcelona and Real Madrid fan show to finish off here on a Friday night. The energy, I feel, has just gone up a level. Loving the music and loving talking about all things on the continent. We're going to be talking about Real Madrid and we're going to be talking about Barcelona. We're going to be looking back at their fortunes in the first round of Champions League group stage games and also be talking a little bit about La Liga. Who doesn't love talking about a bit of Spanish football? And to kick us off, we're going to talk about Real Madrid. And I'm delighted to say on this Friday evening at 10:30, joining us on the line is Christopher McCormack, Spanish football journalist and writer for the Managing Madrid website. Thank you so much for joining us this evening, Christopher. Let's start off with Real Madrid's game in midweek in the Champions League away at Paris Saint-Germain. It ended in a 3-0 defeat. Was that a little bit flattering for PSG, or were Real Madrid really not at the races?
No, Real Madrid weren't at the races at all for that game. It was, I think, everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. There was nothing cohesive about the sides. No one really performed, and anyone who could have performed just wasn't in the kind of right system to have their strengths prioritized and their weaknesses kind of hidden. It was a very, very disappointing performance.
One of the big talking points of the game, Christopher, was the Gareth Bale goal, or should I say no goal, that was ruled out. A terrific volley that was given a handball. It was cushioned by his arm. Do you feel like that was a harsh decision, considering the way that UEFA have given the directive to referees for handballs, or do you feel like it was a pretty just decision?
It's a decision in keeping with kind of the VAR era. Now that referees have the devices to review these decisions, they're coming down hard on a handball. So I wasn't too upset about the decision. I thought, if there was contact on the hand, that's fair enough.
Where is Gareth Bale at the moment? Because it seemed for all money that over the summer that Bale had to go while Zinedine Zidane was at the club. How key a player do you think he is going to be? Because he's obviously going to stay because the window's now slammed shut. How do you think Zinedine Zidane is going to use him this season?
Yeah, Gareth Bale's kind of a very ironic case at the moment for Real Madrid. He's gone from, a man who was that Zidane was so desperate to offload that he came out to the press in July, obviously, and he said that he wanted him gone as soon as possible. And after that move didn't fall through, Bale's gone on and actually become one of the Madrid's most dangerous players for the start of the season. He scored twice against Villarreal. He scored on the season opener as well against Celta Vigo. So he's easily one of the team's most informed players. As long as he starts, I think, and stays fit, this sort of Gareth Bale is probably going to stay around. I think he's playing in spite of the coach's own opinions on him. And I think he's enjoying proving a lot of his critics wrong at the moment. So I expect him to stick around in this form until January at least, and then we'll have to see what happens.
One man that has recently made his debut for Real Madrid is Eden Hazard, and certainly didn't restore his name in the Chelsea fans' good books after saying that the Real Madrid fans are more passionate, or La Liga fans are more passionate than some of the English fans. Obviously, it's very, very early on in his career at Real Madrid. How do you see him fitting into this side, and how key is he going to be this season? Obviously, there's no Cristiano Ronaldo anymore in Madrid. How intrinsic a part of this Madrid team is he going to be?
I think he's struggled with his fitness, as the entire squad has. I don't think the preseason was as thorough as the Madrid would have hoped, and I don't think at the end of it that management or the players felt that they were at the right place physically for the new season. And then Hazard obviously had an injury just before the start of the season that left him out. He only made his debut for the proper debut for the club against Levante on Saturday. So I think he's still struggling with injury and still, you know, getting to match sharpness. But once he, you know, once he gets up to that level, he's a very important player for Madrid in terms for creatively and in terms of goal scoring. He's a very important player.
Where do you think that defeat against PSG in midweek leaves them in this Champions League group? Because the other two teams, Club Brugge and Galatasaray, played out a 0-0 draw on the same night. So it's not necessarily a question of Real Madrid failing to get through the group, but what do we think about Real Madrid in this year's Champions League? Are they going to be way off the pace in general?
I don't know. It's hard to say. You know, there's a lot of football to be played between now and the end of the group Champions League group stages, but going off recent performances, you'd fancy PSG to top this group now. Madrid just don't look at the races at the moment and just don't look as cohesive as Thomas Tuchel has PSG. I mean, they didn't even have their full front three fully fit and starting for that game. So, and, you know, they're only going to get better as the season goes on.
Before we talk about matters domestically in La Liga, I wanted to touch on Zinedine Zidane, because when he came back in March of this year, it was seen as a great return. Obviously, he won back-to-back-to-back Champions League titles at Real Madrid. He's obviously a hero on the field as well as now off it as the manager. Things haven't exactly gone swimmingly. Do you think, one, maybe is he on borrowed time, or two, could you see Zidane potentially walking away rather than Real Madrid actually having to sack him?
I think when things go wrong, the manager's always under pressure, regardless who it is. I think considering the fixtures he has heading into, you know, from end of September till October, you know, he has to play Atletico Madrid away next weekend. He has to play Sevilla away this weekend. He has Barcelona, you know, very difficult fixtures in coming weeks. I think if he's not under pressure now, then he will definitely be under pressure come the end of October. As for sacked or walking away, I don't know. anything's possible, really. You know, if results don't turn, then you know anything's possible.
What have you made of Real Madrid's start to domestic life this season? In La Liga, they're currently third after four games, 8 points, still unbeaten, two wins and two draws. Have they flattered to deceive a little bit? They've scored nine goals, conceded six, so quite a few goals conceded already. How would you assess their domestic form at the start of this season?
It's been very mixed. The opener to Celta Vigo was a 3-0 win, which on paper looks great, but in reality, Celta Vigo had at least three chances to score themselves, and they had the stuffings knocked out of them by a really superb Toni Kroos goal to make it 2-0, and they just never looked like a threat afterwards. The Real Valladolid game, which was the second game of the season, was probably the best performance we've seen from the team so far. The first 75 minutes of that were brilliant, and then Zidane took off James and Isco, and they lost control, scored, and then conceded. And then the Villarreal game was a disaster from first minute to the 90th. It was very, very underwhelming. And then the first 45 minutes of Levante was good, and the second 45 minutes was a kind of continuation of what we saw at Villarreal, very poor performance. So it has been a really, really mixed start to the season.
Up next for Real Madrid on Sunday, it is a trip to the Ramon Sanchez Pizjuan to take on Sevilla. How difficult a game is this looking? Sevilla currently top off the table, 10 points through their first four games. As you mentioned, not only this weekend they're playing Sevilla, but then in a week's time, a trip to their Madrid rivals Atletico.
Yeah, Sevilla away has been a difficult trip for Madrid since Jose Mourinho left the club. I think we've recorded one win since his back-to-back 6-2 wins there in 2011 and 2012. It's a really difficult place to go. There's a couple of former Madrid players, and there's a former Madrid manager in Julian Lopetegui, and there's a Madrid player on loan in Sergio Reguilón. And you know, the club has a history of their former players coming back to haunt them in matches like this. I mean, Angel Di Maria obviously on Wednesday got that brace, so yeah, it's a really, really difficult game and can go wrong if the team goes in with the same attitude and same system that they went into the PSG game in.
Let's look at some of the summer transfer business, because Real Madrid certainly did a lot of it and spent a huge amount of money. We've already talked about Eden Hazard, who was one of the biggest investments of the summer across Europe. Looking at a couple of the defensive reinforcements they brought in, they signed Ferland Mondi from Lyon at left back. Also, Eder Militao was confirmed numerous months ago from Porto. How do you view these players settling in at Real Madrid, and do you think they're players that long term can succeed for Los Blancos?
They haven't really had a chance to impress so far. The PSG game was Militao's first game with Madrid, his competitive debut for Madrid. I've enjoyed watching Mendy. He made his debut against Villarreal, I believe, and he's kind of chalk and cheese to Marcelo. He's a much more defensively sound option at left back as compared to Marcelo, and he lacks kind of the offensive side of the game, but that he's young enough to work on that. Like we've already said, we've talked about Hazard, and then Luka Jovic is in the similar boat to Militao. You know, he hasn't really gotten a chance between fitness and the form of Karim Benzema has kind of kept him out of the squad. So we haven't really seen enough of these players to judge them properly. But I think based off their stints at their previous clubs, I think they're very promising batch of players.
And just finally, Christopher, I mean, this is the million-dollar question. Where do you see Real Madrid's season going? Or is the unpredictability of it part of the Madrid circus that you just simply never know what's going to happen next, both domestically and in Europe? How do you see Real Madrid's season panning out? Can you see Zidane still in charge by the end of the season?
It's a roller coaster ride. It's part of the reason I love the club. You never know what's going to come at you week from week. I mean, where we're sitting now, I think things look bleak. Zidane doesn't look like he'll survive the season if the team continues as it is. But we've seen in the past where all it takes is one win and all of a sudden Madrid are back amongst Europe's elite and they're Champions League contenders and all that. So I don't know. I think if they get through these next couple of games with, you know, impressive results and good performances, then anything's possible, but we'll have to wait and see.
Thank you very much for your time this evening, Christopher. That was Christopher McCormack, a Spanish football journalist and writer for the Managing Madrid website, talking us through all things Real Madrid. Part of the Madrid circus is the fact that it is so unpredictable. You just simply never know what's going to happen next with Real Madrid. Will Zidane still be there by Christmas? The likes of Eden Hazard, how will he fit in at Real Madrid? Up next, we'll be turning our attention to all things Barcelona.
Love Sport Radio, the station giving fans a voice.
This is the El Clasico Barcelona and Real Madrid fan shows here on this Friday night. As I mentioned a few moments ago, we're going to be turning our attention to all things Barcelona, and I'm delighted to say that joining us this evening to talk all things Barcelona, we can talk to Richard Fitzpatrick, Spanish-based football journalist and author of the book El Clasico Barcelona vs Real Madrid. Thank you so much for joining us this evening, Richard. For Barcelona, it was a 0-0 draw away in Germany at Borussia Dortmund. What is a very intimidating atmosphere. Will Barcelona look at that and think, actually, that's not a bad point considering Inter Milan drew 1-1 against Slavia Prague in the other game in the group?
Yeah, I think they will. They'd be disappointed with the performance. They were outplayed on the night, but like you say, they didn't lose, and it's honours even in the group. So it's an away point, nothing catastrophic. But the performance will be worrying, and it's this away form that has been troubling for them. So far this season, they've had two games away in the league and they've only got 1 point out of those games. They play away this weekend to Granada, so they'll be looking to change that trend.
Surely, how highly do you rate Marc-Andre Ter Stegen as a penalty stopper? He obviously saved Marco Reus's penalty in that goalless draw in the Champions League. I'm guessing that Ernesto Valverde will owe a lot to Ter Stegen for keeping Barcelona in that game.
Oh, he was immense. The wall is what the Catalan press are calling him. He was incredible, and he has been that way for the last two or three seasons. He's along with Piqué and Messi, he's been the pillar of that side over the last couple of years. He's a brilliant keeper. I think he's saved like something like four out of the last six penalties in the Champions League that have been taken on him. He's an incredible goalkeeper. It would be hard to argue that he's not in the top three keepers in the world.
One man I wanted to get your views on is a extremely young player, Ansu Fati, just 16 years old. Obviously, was originally from Guinea-Bissau, also eligible to play for Portugal. Before we talk about perhaps him playing for Spain in the future, this kid is super talented. How amazed have you been by a kid? That's what he is, at 16 years old, starting in a Champions League game for Barcelona against Borussia Dortmund.
Oh, it's out of this world. I think it was Diario Sport or Mundo Deportivo had a fun cover last Sunday saying, from what planet have you come from? It's just like he's landed from Mars. Nobody saw this coming. He jumped straight from the youth division in the club, bypassed the reserve team straight into the first team. And like you say, he's only 16, the youngest goal scorer in Barcelona's history, the youngest player for the club to play in the Champions League. It's just staggering, only 16. I mean, if he was doing this at a club like Valladolid, it would be sensational. But to do it at Barca, and last Sunday in particular, he was only his third appearance for the club. He's played 10 minutes against Real Betis. He'd come on for the last half hour away against Osasuna. He scored a header within 6 minutes. But then this game last Sunday last Saturday night against Valencia, he was just incredible. Scored within 2 minutes, then provided an amazing assist for Frankie de Jong to score 5 minutes later. Could possibly have been awarded a penalty. Skimmed the post with a shot from the edge of the box. He was doing sombreros in Valencia's box. The stadium was going crazy. So he's been a real shining light for the club in what has been a poor or an average start to the season. But he's got people really, really excited.
As I mentioned, he's been granted Spanish citizenship, paving the way for him to play for them internationally, despite the fact that he remains eligible for Guinea-Bissau and Portugal. If he does decide that he wants to play for Spain, how quickly do you think we'll see him in that setup and playing for the senior side, considering he's already broken into the Barcelona team?
Yeah, very quickly. I think for Spain itself, like there's an under-17 World Cup coming up next month, and it looks as if he'll go to that. Although Ernesto Valverde says he would regret it, that he's very useful for him in the first team squad at the moment. How soon would he make it into the senior team? Gosh, it's hard to know. They're light, actually, as it happens, on attacking options. They don't have really world class players up front. They're good in midfield and in defence. But yeah, it's difficult to say. I mean, we must be cautious. He's had an incredible start, but we've seen this a million times. A young kid gets into the first team, and there's huge pressure. It's not going to be a smooth ride. He has been getting chances because of injuries. Messi is just coming back. He'll probably play again at the weekend. He came on as a sub during the week. Ousmane Dembele has been out injured for 5 weeks with the hamstring injury. So all these guys have to come back into the team. So Ansu Fati will take his place further down the pecking order. I think realistically, I think a place in the Spain squad is a bit away from him, yes.
Before we move on to domestic matters, just one final word on the Champions League. As I mentioned, Dortmund are in Barcelona's group. Inter Milan drew 1-1 with Slavia Prague at the San Siro. Do you think it's a foregone conclusion that Barcelona will top that group, or could you see one of Inter Milan or Borussia Dortmund potentially pushing into that number one spot?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's a foregone conclusion. We've seen over the last few years there's been surprises in the Champions League. Borussia Dortmind, I would think, are stronger than Inter Milan. I recall they edged Real Madrid into. They won their group with Real Madrid. Was it last season or the season before? So Borussia Dortmund would be a very real threat for that number one position. But I couldn't see Barca not getting out of the group. That would be a major, major surprise.
Looking at things domestically, then, Barcelona are fifth at the moment after four games on 7 points. Up next is a game on Saturday evening away at Granada. One of the criticisms of La Liga is that it a lot of the time is quite predictable, but Granada do have the same number of points as Barca, so will it be as easy as maybe the neutral might believe it could be?
Yeah, the league has got a bit more competitive or more evenly matched over the last two or three years. The TV deal the money from the TV deals are being distributed more equitably by law now. So the gulfs in the income and the revenue and the money that clubs have to spend on their squads isn't as bad as it was 5 or 6 years ago. You would have had Barca and Madrid winning league titles with 100 points. That doesn't happen anymore. But Granada would be, I mean, they're, like you say, they're up in the European places at the moment. They're sixth in the league table. So, and I mentioned at the top there, Barca's away form has been poor. So that's a big banana skin for the club. A small state, small ground. It's exactly the kind of graveyards that big clubs topple in, so they'll be anxious, and it's a lot of pressure on them. They have to get a win. You know, it'll be very worrying for them if they can't pull 3 points out of it. So there's a lot of pressure on Barca, and it's far from a foregone conclusion.
And just finally, Ernesto Valverde obviously has done pretty well domestically, but European wise, Barcelona fans would say he's done nowhere near good enough. How much pressure is he on this season to perform, not just on a domestic level, but actually perhaps more importantly in the Champions League?
Oh, huge pressure. He ran away with the league title in both these seasons, but it counts for nothing because of two factors. One is Real Madrid have won, you know, four Champions League trophies in the last, six seasons or so. So that colours everything, as you can imagine, in Spain, or in Barcelona terms, when their big rival has been so successful. And then the second factor is it's not that they lost semi-finals or quarter-final games in the last 2 years. They got murdered embarrassingly both seasons. Huge comeback defeats against Roma 2 years ago in the quarter-final, and worse, the 4-0 defeat at Anfield last May. So those defeats are harrowing the club. They're huge psychological blows. So Valverde is under a lot of pressure, and so far it's very, very early in the season, but the mood isn't good. You know, the sensations aren't good, but perhaps things will improve now that they have their full strike force back. Suarez missed a couple of the early games as well through injury, but you'll see at the weekend they'll probably have the A-list trident up front: Griezmann, Suarez, and Messi. So things might start coming together for them, but so far it's been an underwhelming start to the season.
Thank you very much for joining us this evening, Richard. That was Richard Fitzpatrick, Spanish-based football journalist and author of the book El Clásico, Barcelona versus Real Madrid. That's it for the El Clásico Barcelona and Real Madrid fan show. It's been a fantastic night of fan shows. We started off between 7 and 8 with the Chelsea fan show, looking ahead to the big game of the Premier League weekend between Chelsea and Liverpool at Stamford Bridge. We then had the Leeds fan show, looking ahead to Leeds Derby, always a spicy game after Spygate. Then obviously we had the Millwall fan show between 9 and 10 ahead of their big game at the Den against QPR. And then also Brighton fan show between 10 and 10.30 before the El Clasico. That's it for the fan shows tonight. Up tomorrow morning between 8 and 12, it is the weekend breakfast show. So make sure you stay tuned for that with Ewan Thomas and Paul Mortimer. That's it from me. Good night.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.